For What's Universal Time, stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after this latest world news headline.
I'm Ray Kugel reporting. U.S. Senate allows telephone surveillance program to expire. The U.S. National Security Agency lost the legal authority to collect telephone records after the Senate failed to agree late Sunday on an extension of several provisions put in place following the September 11, 2001 terror attacks. The Senate did not approve the measure before the surveillance program expired at midnight, but could still pass the bill later this week. The one secret program that collected information such as the phone numbers, date, and duration of calls to try to impede suspected terrorists drew criticism from Americans who said it violated their privacy. East African community leaders say Burundi's election scheduled later this month should be delayed at least 6 weeks in the wake of deadly street violence. An emergency regional summit Sunday also called on all parties to stop violence and for creating conditions for the return of refugees who have fled the political unrest. Richard Sasibera is the group's secretary general.
The summit calls on all parties to stop violence and exercise restraint during this period.
Burundi's President Pierre Nkurunziza, who is seeking a controversial third term, did not attend the meeting. Burundi's foreign minister appeared in his place. Five people were killed near the Libyan city of Misrata Sunday. It was a suicide car bombing claimed by Islamic State militants. The explosion occurred at a security checkpoint west of the city. Misrata is aligned with the unofficial government that controls the capital, Tripoli. Internationally recognized leadership is based in the eastern city of Tobruk. This is VOA News. An Egyptian appeals court Sunday sentenced well-known lawyer and human rights activist Mahinar El-Masri and two others to 15 months in prison on charges of attacking a police station. El-Masri went to an Alexandria police station in 2013 to check up on a fellow lawyer who'd been arrested. Officers accused her and co-defendants of trying to storm the building and attack officers. The U.S. State Department says that several Americans are being held by the Shiite Houthi insurgents in Yemen, who ousted the American-backed government and continue their fight for control of the country. The Washington Post newspaper reported that four U.S. nationals are believed to be held at a prison near the Yemeni capital Sana'a, but the U.S. efforts to free them have been unsuccessful. The newspaper said none of those held in a U.S. government worker. Three are believed to have been working for private sector companies, while the fourth, whose occupation is unknown, holds dual U.S.-Yemeni citizenship. Two British banks say they've launched internal reviews into how allegedly corrupt payments were funneled through their institutions in the current FIFA bribery scandal. Barclays and Standard Chartered were among dozens of banks mentioned in the U.S. indictment last week. No banks have been charged with wrongdoing in the case. Meanwhile, British Secretary of State for Culture, Media and Sport, John Whittingdale, is calling for the resignation of FIFA's president, Sepp Blatter.
I would like to see a complete fundamental reform of FIFA under a new leadership. That is what we have been calling for all these times. Greg Dyke said yesterday that he did not believe that Sepp Blatter could continue much longer. I very much hope that that is the case.
John Whittingdale is British Secretary of State for Culture, Media and Sport. The International Monetary Fund has lowered its growth forecast for Ukraine's economy to minus 9%. The negative growth projection, down from a 5% estimate in April, was announced Sunday in Kiev, along with estimates of 46% inflation this year. IMF officials link the inflation projection to surging oil prices and a large exchange rate depreciation earlier this year as a pro-Russian rebellion raged in Ukraine's east. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry will remain in a Geneva, Switzerland hospital overnight after breaking his leg in a bicycle accident Sunday. He's expected to make a full recovery and planning to fly home to the United States today. Secretary Kerry was in Switzerland for talks with Iran's foreign minister, Mohammad Javad Zarif, in efforts to reach a nuclear deal before the deadline of June 30th. I'm Ray Kugel in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Bate in Washington. Today is Monday, June 1st, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Burundi's government says it is open to a proposal by East African leaders to delay parliamentary and presidential elections for at least 6 months, but
as regards the postponement as requested by the summit, the electoral commission with all political parties and other stakeholders will look into the matter and come up with a proposal that will be submitted to the government.
Gave Abeyeho is the deputy spokesman for President Pierre Nkurunziza. Zimbabwe and the UN signed a $1.6 billion development deal. Thousands continue to flee renewed fighting in northern Mali, and Sierra Leone's government promotes a post-Ebola recovery plan with its diaspora citizens.
We wanted to be very proactive. It is based on our optimism that very soon we are going to kick Ebola out, just as our Liberia did. And already we have seen the symptoms for that.
Abdullahi Berete is the National Publicity and Outreach Coordinator in the Office of Sierra Leone's Government. Africans seen the U.S. hold a belated Africa Day celebration, and a new study finds that smokers quit often when given financial incentives. Those stories plus Mark Oman Sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. A spokesman for Burundian President Pierre Nkurunziza says the government is open to the proposal made by leaders of the East African Community, the ECA, to delay the country's upcoming parliamentary and presidential elections by at least 6 months. But Deputy Presidential Spokesman Gervé Abeyeho says the Burundian Electoral Commission, in collaboration with political parties, will consider the EAC request and come up with a proposal for the government to consider. But Abeyeho says while the government is open to the ECA proposal, any changes must remain within the limits set by Burundi's constitution, which mandates that the president-elect be sworn in on August 26 this year.
The government is taking note of the proposal made by the EAC Summit of Heads of State in Dar es Salaam. First of all, the government appreciates the position of the summit that elections must take place in Burundi, contrary to what opposition parties and some civil society organizations have been saying, that conditions were not conducive for elections. Now, as regards the postponement as requested by the summit, the electoral commission with all political parties and other stakeholders will look into the matter and come up with a proposal that will be submitted to the government. But what the world must know is that the electoral calendar should remain within the limits set by the constitution, because the president-elect must be sworn in on 26th August this year. Otherwise, going beyond this schedule could maybe lead to a kind of political vacuum, and this is what the government would not like to see happening.
Mr. Abeyeho, did you say that whether the elections are postponed or not should be the decision of the Electoral Commission?
Yes, please.
You know that President Nkurunziza is in charge of that country, and to say that the Electoral Commission should make the decision, that is dodging the request that the East African leaders have made. In the meantime, you are aware that the parliamentary elections are supposed to take place on June 5th. That's coming up this week.
Yes, the local or communal and the legislative elections are scheduled for next Friday. Now, what I could tell to our listeners is that this is an urgent matter for the government to consider. I believe that the government will convene this week to look into this and liaising with the Electoral Commission, so that the solution for this postponement request can be found as quickly as possible.
Now, the East African leaders have also called on your government to immediately disarm the youth groups affiliated with the ruling party. They claim that because these youth groups are the one causing a lot of violence.
This is a security issue for security apparatus in this country to handle. The world will be told who is causing violence and who is not. That this insurrection was labeled as illegal by the government of Burundi.
Why did President Nkurunziza not attend the meeting? Was he not invited, or was he concerned that because the last time he attended, there was an attempted coup?
You know, the attempted coup failed, which means that the situation is under control. Even countries like Somalia, which is facing an insurrection by Al-Shabaab, or a country like Nigeria with the Boko Haram insurrection, the presidents of those countries do go out of the country for even several days. So if the president did not attend this summit, it means he had another agenda to attend too.
Gervais Abeyeho is the deputy spokesman for Burundian President Pierre Nkurunziza. He was speaking with me from the capital, Bujumbura. A spokesman for Sierra Leone President Ernest Bai Koroma says the government wants to build a stronger health system that will withstand the test of time in post-Ebola Sierra Leone. Abdoulaye Birete is touring the United States and Canada to explain the government's post-Ebola recovery plan to Sierra Leoneans in the diaspora. This comes as the U.S. Centers for Disease Control still classifies Sierra Leone and Guinea as two countries with widespread Ebola transmission. Birete says the recovery plan being promoted is based on the government's optimism that soon the country will be Ebola-free.
Well, the reason is very simple. For us, we wanted to be very proactive. It is based on our optimism that very soon we are going to kick Ebola out, just as our Liberia did. And already we have seen the symptoms for that, because for the past couple of weeks, including today, we only recorded one case in Putsloko in the northern part of the country. And for the past 2 weeks, we have been recording zero cases until when we had a relapse. So part of that is we don't want to wait until when the WHO will have declared us Ebola free, after we'll have gone zero cases for 42 days. That is why we have put together, and the good thing, our international development partners have all endorsed our post-Ebola recovery program, because they think, and just as the government thinks, that it is the way to go.
You mentioned money provided recently. That's the World Bank contribution recently?
Absolutely. The World Bank and the government of Sierra Leone came together and put in place about $8 million United States dollars that we identified four districts that we have about 13,000 households that are below the poverty line. For now, we are only concentrating in four districts, which is Kono, Moyamba, Bombali in the north, as well as Western area.
Your critics say that your government did not deserve any assistance from the World Bank because they claim that your government has not fully accounted for the last Ebola funds.
Well, so far I can say we still continue to enjoy the confidence of the international community, particularly our development partners, including the World Bank. And besides, one of the reasons why I'm even in North America is to tell the story that indeed all those that are calling for the government to account for Ebola funds are virtually supporting President Koroma's initiative, because it was him who first blew the whistle that Ebola is blood money, and that whosoever who is found culpable must be willing to account. And that is how President Koroma even authorized the audit service of Sierra Leone to institute a transactional real-time auditing that named people, including civil society organizations, who are yet to even account. And the matter is now before the Public Accounts Committee, and it's been broadcast live on radio and television. That tells you we are also trying to be transparent in the fight against corruption, which is the hallmark of this government.
Abdoulaye Birete is National Publicity and Outreach Coordinator in the Office of Sierra Leone's Government Spokesman. He was speaking with me from New York City. Zimbabwe and the United Nations last Friday signed a $1.6 billion four-year development aid package for boosting various sectors, including food production and HIV prevention. Ivan Chifera, the VOA Zimbabwe service, reports from Harare.
Meshack Svanda, Chief Secretary to the President and Cabinet, signed the agreement on behalf of the government, while the United Nations was represented by Resident Coordinator Bishop Barajuli. The development package will support six national development priorities, including food and nutrition, gender equality, HIV and AIDS, poverty reduction, and natural resources value addition, public administration and governance, and social services. Svanda said Zimbabwe was grateful for the assistance as it comes at a time when the country is experiencing economic problems. He said the financial and technical support will help Zimbabwe achieve its development goals. Most importantly, Svanda said the aid will be channeled through Treasury, unlike in the past when such assistance was sent directly to development partners.
Now they are putting their money towards the voters' fund. So in other words, it's going to buttress our development trust rather than not supporting our mission.
He said Unlike during the inclusive government, when the UN focused on humanitarian assistance, it is now focusing on development. Sivanda was optimistic that the move by the UN will influence other donors to follow suit.
We think this is heralding the first initiative of pushing other donors to follow.
Parajuli said the assistance shows that the UN is committed in assisting Zimbabwe. A development worker, Anna Sivanda, tells Studio 7, while the move by the UN is welcome, she fears the funds may be abused.
I think it goes a long way, but it's a bit tricky as I see it, because of late the government has not been transparent in using these finances to develop the nation at large.
Economist James Joa said channeling financial assistance through the government in the near future is a clear indication that the UN now recognizes the ZANU-PF government. He said mechanisms must be put in place to ensure the funds are used for the intended purposes. The UN has spent $1.6 billion in development aid to Zimbabwe in the last 4 years. Reporting from Harare, this is Ivan Chifera.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Bate in Washington. Today is Monday, June 1st. And please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is 16:30 past the hour. Tens of thousands of people are fleeing their homes in northern Mali as clashes between pro- and anti-government armed groups escalate. The UN Refugee Agency reports many of the newly displaced have seen their houses looted and burned and their shops and livestock pillaged. Lisa Schneider reports for VOA from Geneva.
The number of internally displaced people in Mali, which had been going down, is again surging upwards. Before the recent escalation of fighting, 43,000 people had not returned to the homes they fled after civil war broke out in 2012. Now, the total number of displaced has increased to just over 100,000. The UN Refugee Agency reports fighting between the government and various rebel groups is centered in the Gao, Mopti, and Timbuktu areas of northern Mali. UNHCR spokesman William Spindler tells VOA the armed groups are a complex, motley mixture of pro-government militia, Tuareg separatists, and ethnically based militias.
This deterioration of the security situation takes place just days after the signing of the Algiers peace agreement between the government and several of the armed groups in Bamako on the 15th of May. So obviously this deterioration of the security conditions is very worrying. We're following it closely. But again, our main emphasis and priority are the civilian populations that are being displaced.
The newly displaced tell aid workers they fled their villages because of fear of violence or forced recruitment by armed groups. Spindler says many are sleeping outdoors and some are staying with friends or relatives in neighboring villages. He says many displaced women and children urgently need shelter, water, and food.
We have great difficulty having access to the area. Information is very scarce. We have received some information from our teams on the ground, but they are operating under very difficult conditions because of the security. We don't always have access to many of these places. We have done some distributions of aid.
In addition to internal displacement, the UNHCR reports small numbers of refugees are crossing to neighboring countries following the renewed violence. Since January, it says 3,500 new refugees have gone to Mali, Burkina Faso, Mauritania, and Niger. Although the numbers are relatively low, Spindler says they are worrying because they seem to be reversing a trend of returns. The Mali government estimates more than 35,000 refugees have returned home since 2013. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
To celebrate this year's Africa Day, the African Ambassadors Group to the U.S. held a series of events highlighting the progress the continent has made and the challenges that lie ahead. Topping of all celebrations was a gala, which, as Mariama Diallo reports, was fun but also touched on this year's theme of women empowerment and development.
From traditional dances from Rwanda and Ivory Coast to a whirling dervish, an Egyptian folk dance, to Nyawa music from Morocco, it was a night of celebration. Mohamed Taufik is Egypt's ambassador to the U.S. and co-chair of this year's event.
What is particularly important is that Africa is succeeding. Africa is on the rise. For decades in the past, Africa was a continent with many problems. Today, Africa is pulling its act together. And we're doing that because we're working together as a team. All Africans have these aspirations, and together we'll be able to achieve them.
Ambassador Rashad Bouhlal from Morocco says this year's theme about empowering African women is of the essence.
Women in Africa are extraordinary. We just need to give them opportunities. Second, Europe, the United States where we are right now, and other countries can help do more to empower women. There is a lot being done, but maybe not enough. And I think it's a good opportunity, a day like today, to inform people about already what women are doing and what we can do more.
Oliver Waneha, the Ugandan ambassador to the U.S., says an evening like this one is a moment to think of the continent as a united group. As a woman ambassador, the theme definitely speaks to her.
It's very important to empower women because it's not just a human right, it's a development issue. You're talking about 51% of our populations, you know, being engaged, being involved, being empowered so that they can meaningfully contribute to the development of our continent.
South Sudanese ambassador to the U.S., Garang Ding Akwang, says the continent is developing despite all the challenges.
We have seen socio-economic developments, strides in technological development in Africa, innovations, and this is the century for Africa. Only that we need to stop some of these insecurities that are happening in the continent. We need to embark on social economic development so that we stop our youth being frustrated and trying to flee the continent looking for better opportunities.
2015 has been declared a year of women empowerment and development towards achieving Africa's Agenda 2063, which is a roadmap for Africa's long-term socio-economic transformation within the next 50 years. In Washington, Mariama Diallo, VOA News.
The World Health Organization declared yesterday Sunday as World No Tobacco Day when smokers are encouraged to lay down their cigarettes or other tobacco products for 24 hours. One of the newest benefits to help people ease out of their addiction does not involve pills or patches, but rather the good old-fashioned money. VOA's Jessica Berman reports.
Cigarette smoking, the number one cause of preventable death, is truly a global health problem, with an estimated 80% of smokers lighting up in developing countries. If current rates continue, experts say, nearly 1 billion people per year will die of smoking-related causes by 2030. There are a variety of strategies to help people stop smoking. These include education classes and medications which lessen the urge to light up, from drugs to nicotine replacement patches. Nicotine lozenges combined with drugs such as bupropion have the highest success rate, helping an estimated 25% of smokers to quit. A new study has found that monetary incentive programs are five times more effective than free smoking cessation aids. The findings were published in the New England Journal of Medicine. The most effective of these programs plays on a human tendency towards something called risk aversion. According to lead author Scott Halpern, having people put their own money at risk if they don't stop smoking is even more effective than simply giving people a cash award if they do quit.
We simply don't wish to part with our own money. And that explains both why relatively few people were willing to make that $150 deposit in the first place, but also why among those who do, the skin in the game approach is so overwhelmingly effective and far more effective than any other smoking cessation strategy than has ever been tried.
In a study of monetary incentive programs involving smokers at a large U.S. drug sales company, employees who deposited their own $150 and received it back with an additional $650 when they stop were twice as successful at quitting as those who were simply given $800 after they kicked the habit. Halpern, a health policy analyst at the University of Pennsylvania, says the hundreds of dollars spent on monetary incentive smoking cessation programs are a bargain.
Employers are spending somewhere between $3,000 and $6,000 per year to employ a smoker above and beyond the costs to employ a non-smoker, and that's attributable to increased healthcare costs, reduced work productivity, absenteeism, and the like.
Halpern says the same benefit in cost savings could apply to governments that also spend a lot of money on smokers. Jessica Berman, VOA News, Washington.
Time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. Here is Mark Omer in Johannesburg, South Africa. Good Monday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we begin with football. Africans had mixed results at the men's FIFA Under-20 World Cup in New Zealand on Sunday. Goals scored late in the second half by striker Adama Traore and attacking midfielder Barclay Diudone lifted Mali to a 2-0 triumph over Mexico in Dundee. Tournament debutants Senegal received their baptism of fire when they went down 3-0 to Portugal in Hamilton. Early on Saturday, Ghana and Austria drew 1-1. Today, Monday, Nigeria took on Brazil in New Plymouth. Meanwhile, here in South Africa, winger Dion Hoto scored twice as Namibia beat Mozambique 2-0 in the Council of Southern Africa Football Association's COSAFA Cup final at the Moruleng Stadium in Northwest Province on Saturday. Earlier on, Madagascar edged Botswana 2-1 in the bronze medal playoff. On Friday, Malawi pipped Zambia 1-0 in the plate final. The plate contest featured teams eliminated in the quarterfinals. Turning to athletics, Kenyan Olympic champion Ezekiel Kemboi clocked 8 minutes and 1.70 seconds to triumph in men's 3,000-meter steeplechase in the world's fastest time this year and a meet record at the IWF Diamond League in Eugene, Oregon State, United States of America on Saturday. Others who ran the world's quickest times in their respective events were Djibouti's Ayanle Suleiman, who clocked 3 minutes and 51.10 seconds in the 1 mile, Kenyan Eunice Jepkoech Sum, who ran 1 minute and 57.82 seconds in women's 800 meters, and Somalia-born Mohamed Farah of Britain, who won the 10,000 meters in 26 minutes and 50.97 seconds. Meanwhile, Ethiopian Genzebe Dibaba clocked 14 minutes and 19.76 seconds to set a meet record in women's 5,000 meters. Ethiopia's Yomif Kejekcha won the men's 5,000 meters in a lifetime best of 13 minutes and 10.54 seconds, while his compatriot Mohamed Aman prevailed in 800 meters in 1 minute and 44.92 seconds. Sprinter Anaso Jobodwana improved his South Africa 200-meter record when he placed second in 20.04 seconds. Ivory Coast's Muriela Hore was second in women's 100 meters in 10.81 seconds, and Kenyan Mercy Cherono was runner-up in women's 1500 meters in a lifetime best of 4 minutes and 1.26 seconds. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Omer in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Monk. Have a good day. And briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. A spokesman for Burundian President Pierre Nkurunziza says the government is open to the proposal made by leaders of the East African community to delay the country's upcoming parliamentary and presidential election by at least 6 months. Deputy Presidential Spokesman Grevé Abeyeho says the Burundian Electoral Commission will consider the suggestion and come up with a proposal for the government. And that's it for this Monday, June 1st edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this week with us. I'm James Barton in Washington, hoping that you will make this week a very productive one.
Everyone is looking for something special when maybe they should just listen instead. The VOA's African Music Mix will soothe your nerves and calm your head. Tune in from 0 to 300 UTC and 1100 to 1300 hours UTC to make you feel good. So treat yourself to that something special.